now that you're all putting down your cell phones and turning up the radio, that's what you should be doing anyway. Hang up and drive is one was one bumper sticker said. Hang up and drive. Another one. Well, there's some other ones that are a little bit more crude out there, but suggesting that, you know, I've been in intersections and somebody has a latte, a cell phone, mm-hmm. and a cigarette,
mm-hmm.
and they're driving.
I know.
And they're yelling at the kids in the back seat. Sorry, there's just an accident going somewhere, just waiting to happen. You know, but anyway. Patrick Doyle's with us. Patrick Doyle's a local area counselor. 776-5368 is the number here. You can call without an appointment. And the number to his office is 301-5500. I know you want to talk about depression.
Mm.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
What makes a person snap and kill 33 people? It's beyond our ability to wrap our brain around this. Mm-hmm. The whole country's in mourning here, obviously mm-hmm. so. And now they're afraid of copycat crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, as we speak, there's some kind of a shooting going on at the moment at a school in Austin, Texas. I mean, what's wrong with this? What's happened here?
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's a single answer. I don't think you can say, here's the single reason why that happens.
Right.
But I'll tell you this. The kid at Columbine, you know, both that kid's parents were teachers, and they didn't really have any clue how bad it was for him internally. And in a situation like this, I believe generally that's the case. People have huge amounts of resentment, which turn to hate, which can turn into this kind of violence.
Well, apparently there's a love triangle going on here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just some of the stuff that's coming out.
I mean, I haven't seen any of it. So
here you are.
I don't know.
A senior in college, you're about ready to graduate and start your career, and you snap.
Yeah, right.
And then there's 2 hours. There's 2 hours from the time he killed two people that he goes over and kills 30 more.
Right. Well, and, you know, once you get into that, a lot of people, I've seen people go into those kind of rages in different areas, you know, like in treatment, you push somebody with the truth, and then they just snap. And once they get to that place, you know, where they're seeing red, they've lost contact with morality, normality. There's no telling what they'll do because they're not rational anymore. They're totally in complete reaction.
Chemical, demonic, both.
I think it's actually, you know, like you said, if somebody's hugely resentful, that resentment can be the result of what they've perceived to be reality, even if it's not. It could be that the fact that the person is completely overwhelmed in terms of they've been traumatized themselves. You never know what's underneath all that. And it could be that the person is, there could be some spiritual influence. I don't think that I believe there usually is some sort of huge spiritual problem in the midst of that. And so, again, that's what I mean. It's hard to... Without knowing the details, it's hard to say this is what happened, but it's always a combination of things that brings a person to that. And here's the other thing.
Because it brings in the question that something that we've heard quite often, even in Christian ranks and Christian psychology, mm-hmm. is that, you know, the mentally ill.
Right.
you know, can they accept Christ fully? Are they capable of doing that? And when they after they have done that, and they commit a crime, I mean, you know, it brings a lot on the table here.
Yeah, it does. Well,
and I'm not trying to confuse you here.
We're trying to
figure how does this happen?
Well, you know, if you read Romans 1, the end of Romans 1, you get a clue. And these kind of things happens because there's an absence of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit, you know, would prevent this. Okay, this mm-hmm. is completely something that's based in the flesh. You read Galatians 5, you read Romans 1. God removes himself from someone. Anything is possible. And this is obviously, this kind of thing is not new. I mean, historically speaking, people have gone on rampages many, many times throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think that we often put it into a modern context and think that's the only time it ever happened. But this isn't new. And if you read the scriptures, and I just read it last night, Romans 1, it is abundantly clear what happens. And this is one of the consequences of people not having the truth of God within them. Now, again, it's not to cast blame. It's just a reality.
All right. Now, this it is a segue in an odd way. It is a segue into depression because isn't anger a byproduct of depression?
Well, actually, depression has been called anger turned inward. And people who are depressed tend to take it out on themselves, and or they go out. You can go suicidal, ultimately, you know, depression gone all the way, suicidal. Or you can go homicidal.
Yeah.
You can go outward. So okay. People tend to go one way or the other.
All right. Rich, you want to join the conversation?
Yeah, I don't have a physical degree in depression, but... Hi, Patrick. Depression for 30 years came from, you know, molestation and physical...
Exactly.
For 10 years, and mm-hmm. then I theft it for 20 more, and
right.
I took a razor blade from my, you know, from the wrist to the elbow. They said that was if you're serious about suicide. Because all that, the rage that I had towards my aggressor was stuffed in.
Yeah.
And then, so, you know, now that I've gone and started counseling, now I find myself verbally just blowing a lot of steam when I stub my toe. So I kind of hear what you guys are saying. But it took accountability and honesty and just admitting that, you know, that these things weren't me, but they, you know, that I had to deal with them.
But they were real and they did happen. And if you don't deal with them, they're going to deal with you.
Yeah, I could have been that guy in Virginia Tech if I hadn't gotten help. So.
All right. Thanks, Rich.
Thank you for just talking about this subject today.
Okay. Thank you. Wow. Depression is such an interesting thing. You want to help people that are helpless. They have good intentions, but they don't have the follow-through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't have...
They're beaten down.
There's no proactive spirit left.
Mm-mm. Defeated, hopeless, overwhelmed. And like Rich said, I think Rich makes a great point. A lot of people who are depressed have an underlying trauma history. Now, when I say that, many people who have the trauma history don't really recognize it as trauma. They just think, well, that happened to me. I should just be able to get over it. It shouldn't bother me anymore. It happened a long time ago. So, you know, I've dealt with people who, you know, one guy who watched his mom be abused by his dad when he was 5. He watched his dad get beat up. I mean, his mom get beat up. And he said to himself internally, I'll never let anybody push me around. So here he is in his late 50s in treatment because he's been violent his whole life. Well, it started when he was 5 watching his dad beat his mom, saying to himself, no one's ever going to push me around.
How do you bring one's faith into this? It seems like God can heal everything else but this.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm sitting here as testimony that God does heal this. God does heal this. In fact, this is where I see more miracles than, you know, any other place, is when I see people... who have been deeply and harshly wounded.
But the big key there is they've made a decision to come to you for help.
Yeah, not all of them.
Well,
sometimes other people have made the decision and sort of strong-armed them into it.
Okay, but all right, but somebody's been proactive in
exactly.
their life.
It
could have
mm-hmm.
been them or a
mm-hmm.
friend or a family mm-hmm. member that got
right.
them out of the corner, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
into your office.
Mm-hmm.
The person who's still in the corner, what mm-hmm. do you tell them?
Well, good question. You know, the other thing that happens, and, you know, to the credit of the Dove, I get a lot of people in my office because they listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
They hear it on the radio, and it's a very non-threatening way to get comfortable with the idea of talking to somebody. People come in my office, and unlike in the past in my counseling...
They already feel like they know you.
Exactly. They do. They already know what I'm going to say 9 times out of 10, because
yeah.
I've said it a bunch of times already,
yeah.
which is very beneficial. It's very beneficial to the person who's scared, spitless, about opening up to someone else. Look, the problem is my trust has been so shattered by people. I've been so hurt. I've been so taken advantage of. I've been run over so many times. There's no way I'm going to go let somebody into this stuff, because I'm not going to get run over again. And when somebody knows that you're safe, it gives them the opportunity to come in. And so this is going to seem like a weird jump, but I think it's absolutely spot on. This is why I think the church is impotent, because we are not proactive. We're waiting for people to come to us. And the scripture says, if you see someone caught in sin, you, who are more spiritual, gently restore them.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say wait. It says go.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, so if we want to help, we first of all, The prerequisite is for us to have our own intimacy with God, to have our own connection with the Holy Spirit, so that we have something, we actually have something to offer. Not a three-step plan for how to get out of depression, because look, if I say this all the time, if I have all the material and all the knowledge and everything I need to build a rocket to the moon, but I have no motive, I will not be going to the moon. And there's a lot of people who are depressed, and the last thing they want is for somebody to come to them and say, here's what you need to do. Here are the things you need to take care of. You need to do this and this and this, and here's the five-step plan. And they're like, you know, if I could do a five-step plan, I wouldn't be depressed. The problem is I can't get out. I am stuck. I got no motive. I don't want to go there. And that's where it says that we're to bear one another's burdens. We're to walk with each other. To have somebody come alongside you and say, you know, I understand. I'm not going to judge you. I get it. I know. I've been there. I know how you feel. Come on. Let's just go hang out and talk. We're not looking for a miraculous, overnight, instantaneous, you know, testimonial healing. We're looking for to be the vessel of God.
I think the hardest thing to understand is that they don't understand or they don't want to understand. They haven't got the energy.
Mm.
They don't have the fortitude to get on with it.
Right.
And I know a lot of folks who have depressed people in their family, and they're frustrated beyond measure because they don't know how to help them.
Right.
And so they suggest a million things to do, and the person who's suffering from depression says, yeah, yeah, you're right, I need to do that. Or they give you all the right answers, but they don't do it.
They can't. That's the problem. So... You know, again, a rule of thumb, depression tends to be when we take the past and we overlay today.
All right. So somebody's listening to us today. They're really struggling with depression. They know they're depressed.
Right.
In fact, they may even be angry that they're on antidepressants.
Right.
Which on itself is another roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
Because you take that stuff, you feel good, then you think you don't need to take it, then you feel bad. So, I mean, it's up, down, up, down.
Right.
Bottom line, somebody knows they need help. What do you do?
Well, first of all, I would say, is there anybody that you know that you trust? Is there anybody in your life that you know won't judge you, they'll listen, and will be there for you? They aren't going to run away. They're not going to, you know, freak out. They're going to be there for you. If there is, you need to take the risk, if you can, to just call them up and say, can we have coffee? Can we? And please, go somewhere that's not in public. Go somewhere where if you need to, you can let it all fly. Because taking that first risk is the biggest step. If you just get with somebody that you trust and you start to let it out, I'm telling you, I can't tell you how many times this has happened to me personally. Once I just start talking about it, I just feel so much better. When I say it out loud to somebody that I know cares about me. And here's the other thing. For me, much of my history has been me doing that out loud in a quiet place with God. Because I didn't have the kind of relationships that could sustain that because I was so secretive. So, but when I go to God, I can say absolutely everything that I feel is the way I feel it. And then I get a relief from that because here's the thing. God doesn't reject me. And this is the thing that causes a lot of people's depression in my mind. They feel disqualified by God because they're depressed. Because of this thing, because of that thing, because they did this, because they were hurt, because
they
were
abused. Disappointed or angry with God because he doesn't heal them.
Right, because he's not taking it away. Exactly.
Yeah.
And what God is saying is, Jesus said, come to me, all you that are weary and heavy laden. Mm-hmm. And if you go to church enough and you read the Bible enough and you pray enough and you do all these things, then Jesus said, come to me, all you that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Rest is something that he gives. You don't earn it. You don't jump through enough hoops to get it. You don't figure it out. It is his gift. And then he says, take my yoke upon you, for it is light and easy. Implication, unlike the one you got, which is about to kill you. And I would say the yoke that we generally pick up is the yoke of outcomes. We're going to be in charge of making sure we're going to make the outcome be the way we need it to be. Well, we're blind, deaf, mute retards. We don't know. God does. And so it's an exercise in trust. And most of us have had very bad experiences with trust. So we just go, forget it. And we just keep harnessing it up back on our shoulders. And God's like, that's you take the yoke of an ox and you put it on an ant. And the same result happens every time.
kills it.
It kills the ant. Because, and even though the ant is an amazing creature, can lift, you know, whatever times his body weight, it doesn't matter. It's still too much weight. And God is basically saying when he says, take my yoke upon you, for it is light and easy. It won't crush you. The one you're carrying will. What's his yoke? Jesus said, love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, and your neighbor is yourself. That is his yoke. Now, here's the problem, though. People hear that, and they say, that's great. But the God that they know isn't good, isn't just, isn't kind. He's distant. He's mean. He's upset. And if that's how you see him, it is not an easy yoke.
Where does depression come from?
Lots of places. Comes from disappointment. It comes from absolute, outright abandonment and abuse. It comes from shattered dreams. It comes from disappointment with people. It comes from all kinds of places. But what keeps it there is those things never being dealt with. They just sit in there. And so now let's say I've you know, had all this disappointment and I don't deal with it. Well, it goes inside and it acts like Velcro to all the other issues or problems that I could have. Now everything's sticking. Nothing gets dealt with. It just all piles up, and it starts to pile up really quickly. And so people can get overwhelmed. They can go from 0 to 60 really quick because I don't know about you, but I live in a world that can be very difficult. I mean, people can be vicious. People can be calloused. People can be unaware. People can be mean. That's a reality. Whether or not those things happen is not the issue. It's going to happen. The difference is, what are you going to do with it? Where are you going to go with it? Are you going to hold it all in and shoulder it all up yourself? Are you going to go to God with skin on, another person? Or are you going to go to God with it? And here's the thing. The first question I often ask people in this situation is, how do you see God? No, not the Sunday school answer. I'm talking about the one that's real. I believe that most...
And how does the depressive God?
Well, I think it's dangerous to blanket that, but I would say in general, not as a safe place. Not as a safe place. Not as a safe place because they're bad, because they're depressed, and that's a total sin. If they were really Christians and they really had faith, they wouldn't be depressed. Well, come on. Have you read the Psalms? I mean, David was depressed. I don't care what you say, the guy was depressed. And he cried out to God, please, God. And I remember Psalm 40, he says, I waited and I waited and I waited. You just hear the rah. And finally, at last, he looked. At last, he looked. And he lifted me out of the deep mud and he set me on a rock to make sure I wouldn't slip. So who did the work? The person? David? No. God. And God has his own timing. I am sorry, and I make no apologies at the same time. God's got his own timing, and I don't know why he does what he does and when he does it, but he's got his own timing. And when he's ready to lift you out of the mud, buddy, he will lift you out of the mud, and there will be no doubt about it.
All right, let's go to the phone. Hi, Steve. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, morning, Perry.
Hey.
Hi.
You know, I've thought about this thing about these guys going off track here and killing all these people. You wonder if most of these type of problems isn't because they haven't followed the Lord's design where mom and dad stay together and mom is home with the children. Now, you know, how many of these children get raised by their babysitter or somebody else, and the plan that the Lord had, which is perfect,
right,
is all out of whack. So you've got all these people that are fouled up because they didn't do what the Lord had plan for us.
Well, that's a great point.
It is. It's a great point. And the consequence is this: you bring up, Steve, something that we in the business call abandonment rage. When someone is abandoned as a child, there is a huge hurt that happens, and abandonment can happen with both parents right in the family.
Right. I think even if mom and dad stay together, but if they're never putting any time into these children,
right,
you still got a problem.
Right. And even if they put some time in, but if the parent is incapable of making a bond with the child, this is a huge issue in our culture. A kid needs to have a bond. If he doesn't have a bond, the kid automatically sees himself as the problem. And if you see yourself as worthless, then you're capable of these kind of acts.
Right. And I think most of the time this happens because young people aren't willing to give up all the neat stuff. I mean, I mean, when we were young, drove an old car. I mean, because my wife stayed home with these kids, and I drove an old clunker car. You know,
right,
until you could afford to buy a good car when you got a little older. But I mean, I just believe that they. I don't know how we got to this point, but they just, I mean, everybody you see drives a brand new car, and they all cost $35,000 or $40,000
Yeah.
Well, everybody has to work to pay for all that. So anyway,
thanks. Good stuff, Steve.
Okay. Good point.
You know, the other thing is a vast majority. I mean, they may be in the car, but they're all plugged into a headset.
Well, even if they're not, they may not be connecting as people. I mean, I use this analogy all the time, and when I get a better one, I'll use it. But until then, I'm going to keep using this one. You've been to the Elmers, you know, where you see the couple that's 75 or 80.
I know where you're going.
Yeah. And they sit there, and they don't ever even look at each other. And the tension is so thick you could cut it with a knife. They don't even like each other. But they've been together 50, 60 years. How could you not have anything to say? I mean, at the very worst, you could just reminisce. But they don't even like each other, but they're still together. You know, well, gee, I'm sure God's up in heaven going, well, this is exactly what I had planned for you guys to be at odds and hate each other in your old age. Well, so that's just proof that two people can be together and not be one bit connected. In fact, it could be the opposite. And there's a lot of situations in families where I see it a lot, where kids are just venomously irritated at the self-centeredness or the meanness or the arrogance of their own parents. And the parents don't understand how they're affecting the kids, because 9 times out of 10, the parents came up in a family where basically the same thing happened.
Well, we're going to run out of time here, but let's get back to depression. It seems to be a silent killer. It's kind of like heart disease, you know. It just sneaks up on you. Well, heart disease and depression, you know, I guess you could say spiritual heart.
There's a connection.
There's a connection there. But what's the first step if you genuinely sense that somebody is depressed? That's number one. And number two is the person who knows they're depressed. I mean, and that one you said, reach out to somebody you can trust.
Right.
What about the one who is depressed, but is concealing it, and yet it's pretty obvious to everybody around them? How do you help them? How do you reach into them and help them?
Well, again, nothing is going to change. Nothing changes if you stay isolated. I mean, nothing changes in a positive way. Things will change if you stay isolated, but it won't be for the positive. If you're the friend of the person who's depressed, take a risk. Swallow hard.
And go for it.
And go to them and say, you know, I really have been concerned about you. I think that maybe you might really be struggling with some things, and I wanna be a part of what's going on with you. I wanna help. I'm not gonna judge. I just wanna walk with you. Whatever it is, doesn't matter. But you see, you can't do that. Do not, and I repeat, do not do that if you don't mean it.
and if you're not committed, there is no such thing as one session.
Exactly. Exactly.
This is long term. You open your mouth, you may be in it for a long time.
And here's my rule of thumb for folks out there. You just take this one and say, you know, by the way kind of thing. But my saying is this. I have no right to point out any dirt unless I'm willing to wash the feet. If you're not willing to do the work of washing feet, you got no right to say a word. You don't want to be pointing out the problem if you're not willing to be involved in fixing it. And this is very important, because 9 times out of 10, also, people that are depressed, they are very aware of people. They can read people really well, and they know a fake from 10 miles away.
Well, that was the point. I think they're usually depressed because of what you said earlier, that is that trusted people have let them down.
That's right.
So what makes you think for a moment they're going to be vulnerable to you?
And so you have to be almost living a little bit exaggeratedly to them, to let them know, I understand you're afraid of trust. I'm not going to break that trust. It's to the best of my ability. You got to communicate that to them.
All right. Before we run out of time, the one who's really struggling with this, I mean, really just struggling, and they're trying to keep their life together. How would you tell them this morning to pray? How would you tell them to approach God?
I would say, first of all, if you believe God is upset with you, or he rejects you, or he doesn't want you, I would encourage you to pick up a copy of the Message and read Hebrews 10, where God says that as a result of his sacrifice, what he has done on your behalf, he sees you as perfect. He has made you perfect by his sacrifice, not having anything to do with you. Mm-hmm. His acceptance of you is complete based on what he has done, if not based on you. I would tell you to pray honestly. Do not hide. Go to God. Test him. You know what? God, here's the deal. This is the thing. I'm furious about this. I'm sick of that. I'm tired of this. Write it down and let it out. Say, God, I need you to show up. Ask him. Be direct. Don't dance around. Don't, you know, pray in old English. Be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Read the Psalms. Read Psalm 40. Read Psalm 42. Two of the best ones, in my opinion. David says in Psalm 42, when my soul is in the dumps, I rehearse everything I know of you. There's an answer.
Mm-hmm.
If you know God to be the God of the universe, a good and loving and merciful and gracious and beautiful and holy God, why would you not go there?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't see him as that, it's time you start fixing that.
Patrick Doyle, local area counselor. The number to his office is 301-5500. Mm-hmm. And
don't grow weary in well-doing.
All right. 301-5500, Patrick Doyle Counseling. Thanks, bud.
You bet.